Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots Monday Morning, where we watch the Sunday morning news shows so that you don't have to. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Mary Matte. Good Monday morning, everybody. Thank you for being here with us. It's so great to see everyone who's here live and also everyone who's here afterwards.
Yeah.
Welcome back in time. What an exciting day. Sort of been a cliffhanger every single week on Useful Idiots Monday morning, trying to figure out when will Congress get the money to prolong these wars, to give Israel
the money.
$26 billion to commit more mass murder, and Ukraine, $60 billion to funnel back into the military-industrial complex, because that's where most of that money is going. And guess what? Congress just passed it, the House overwhelmingly voting for the so-called foreign aid bill. And of course, the Sunday morning news shows, which are basically advertisements for money laundering and war profiteering, are giddy. So it's a very cheery episode today of Monday morning.
So let's start with Meet the Press. As always.
Monday morning. Good Sunday morning. We begin with our brand new NBC News poll and the headline. President Biden is closing the gap with former President Trump. Trump leads Biden by 2 points in a head-to-head matchup, 46-44%. Biden has narrowed that deficit against Trump from 5 points in January. And when third-party candidates, including Robert F. Kennedy, are included, Biden leads by 2 points, 39-37%. The president's job approval has also ticked up to 42%, up 5 points from January. The last time we've seen a 5-point increase for an incumbent president in their re-election year was Bill Clinton in 1996. There are still troubling numbers in the poll for Biden. He trails Trump by 22 points on dealing with inflation and the cost of living. All of it comes amid.
Well, fantastic news. Biden just pushed through more than $86 billion to spend on foreign wars. The mass murder campaign in Gaza by Israel, the proxy war in Ukraine. So if you're a military contractor dealing with inflation, President Biden has your back.
Yeah, he's your man. He's your guy.
Yeah.
You know what?
If you're looking to buy, attack of missiles or artillery shells, these federal subsidies are going to bring those costs down for you.
Yeah. You know, Aaron, when you were saying at the beginning of the show, we've been waiting and waiting for this to happen, made me think of that song, that oldie song, Our Day Will Come and We'll Have Everything. That's what the weapons industry can be singing today.
Oh, absolutely. They're singing the praises of Congress.
Yeah.
For the gift that has just been given. By the way, let's shout out Democrats.
Oh, yeah, of course.
On the Israel vote, I believe about 57 members of the House voted against the funding for Israel's genocide campaign. About 30 of them Democrats. On the Ukraine vote, zero Democrats voted against the funding. Every single Democrat voted to give Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, the CIA billions of more dollars to continue this proxy war, including every single progressive in the House who, if everyone, you know, in case anyone forgot, just over a year ago in October 2022, sent a letter to President Biden asking him very politely to engage in diplomacy with Russia to end the war. They retracted after 24 hours when neocons melted down. They haven't raised the issue since. And now all of them, the squad, the whole progressive caucus, just votes in lockstep with Mitch McConnell and Mike Johnson and most Republicans to give another $60 billion to this war.
You know what we call that?
What's that?
They're walking in Lockheed lockstep.
Definitely Lockheed lockstep.
Yeah. Yeah, they learned their lesson when they got in trouble for writing a letter, which, as you noted, Aaron, did not even ask the U.S. to stop funding the proxy war, merely asked the U.S. to accompany their funding of a proxy war with some talks and negotiation.
Exactly.
But even that was too much.
Yeah, all that's just forgotten. They just completely forgot about it. It just didn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't register anymore. Now it's okay. You want our money. You want our votes. Sure. No questions asked.
Yeah.
Development. 6 months after the president delivered an Oval Office speech pledging wartime aid for Ukraine, $61 billion in new funding finally passed on Saturday, 311-112.
The bill is passed.
A moment of bipartisanship in a Congress primarily defined by its dysfunction.
That's amazing. So usually there's dysfunction, but now we have a bipartisan coming together moment of warmongering and bloodlust.
And the corporate media is so happy that CNN read a headline, I'm not kidding, saying that by letting this measure pass, House Speaker Mike Johnson, who previously installed it, he's basically the new Churchill.
Yeah.
So bipartisanship is alive because both parties can unite behind funneling more money into a disastrous proxy war. That's the lesson.
101 Republicans and 210 Democrats voted in favor, but more Republicans, 112, opposed it. Congress also passed new aid for Israel and Taiwan, along with a measure to force TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, to sell the app. New aid for Ukraine came only after Republican Speaker Mike Johnson, who once opposed it, did an about-face and put his job on the line to get it through amid threats from three far-right Republicans to oust him.
If we turn our backs right now.
That's another bonus, by the way, that you just mentioned, if you're a warmonger, is they also voted to ban TikTok.
Right.
And that's been a top agenda item for warmongers in Washington, because on top of demanding the taxpayers give them more money to continue these wars, continue the mass murder campaign in Gaza, they also want to make sure that young people aren't accessing information that undermines their narrative. So that's why they want to ban TikTok, because they can't control what the kids are seeing on TikTok. And that also passed on Saturday. So what a great day for neocons.
Yeah, because as Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL has said, Israel has a TikTok problem.
Israel does have a TikTok problem, yeah.
Which he is said, that when the truth gets out, it's not good for Israel.
Exactly.
If we turn our backs right now, the consequences could be devastating.
You're being asked to resign. Will you, Jeffries, about that? And do you plan to if it's brought?
No, listen, I, as I've said many times, I don't walk around this building being worried about a motion to vacate. I have to do my job. We did. I've done here what I believe to be the right thing, and that is to allow the House to work its will. And as I've said, you do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may.
Now, the Pentagon has said it has a map.
He's a great example of just how people in Washington, A, have no principles and no backbone. Previously, before he took a job as Speaker, he voted against all these funding measures for Ukraine. Of course, he voted for every funding measure for Israel because he's a Republican. He's evangelical. You know, you have to basically support Israel. But on Ukraine, because I think he maybe was paying attention to his own voters, a majority of Republicans oppose more Ukraine proxy war funding. So he was voting against it, whatever his reasons were. He takes the House Speaker job, and all of a sudden he gets briefings. He's being told that he's going to be remembered as the House Speaker who sold out Ukraine. Everyone will judge him harshly. And he caved. He just completely caved. And now he's talking about being a wartime speaker.
It's good self-identification, honestly.
Massive infusion of military aid for Ukraine ready to go. It comes as Ukrainian President Zelensky said that without this support, we will have no chance of winning. Ukraine's top military commander issued a bleak assessment of the army's positions on the Eastern Front, saying they have worsened significantly in recent days. And the top American military commander in Europe told members of Congress Russia will soon be able to fire 10 shells for every Ukrainian shell.
Sounds like things are going great.
Yeah.
Basically, let's pour more money into it rather than try diplomacy. Because it sounds like, by the way, what's crazy about this testimony from General Cavoli is he said that Russia's military has grown by 15% since the start of the war. Well, just like 4 months ago, back when Biden officials were trying to get more money from Congress, they got anonymous intelligence officials to tell Congress that 90% of Russia's army has been wiped out. Russia's lost 90% of its army. Now, all of a sudden, we get a top U.S. general, the head of the European command, saying, actually, yeah, our bad. They actually grew by 15%. And no one's asked, like, okay, how did it happen so quickly where you were saying 4 months ago that Russia lost 90% of its army? So all of a sudden, they've grown by 15%.
Well, Aaron,
no one bothered to ask that. Yeah.
It's very easy once you understand how the Russian playbook works, the RPB.
RPB.
This is a typical Russian move. And Russians are like They're like worms. When you cut part of them, they just grow back.
Mm, I didn't think of it that way. Yeah. Well, might as well spend more money.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's take a listen to what this witness is saying, because it's a real mind blower. You never think of it without this amazing clip.
One side can shoot and the other side can't shoot back. The side that can't shoot back loses.
Wait, that's
for every Ukrainian shell.
If one side can shoot and the other side can't shoot back, the side that can't shoot back loses.
Wow. You would not know that unless you were hearing from a general, because they understand warfare. I mean, that's the entire point, is that this is such a lopsided fight. And that's why people wanted there to be negotiation. And also, the U.S. will never be able to provide Ukraine with the weapons needed to match Russia.
Exactly. And, you know, nobody said this better than both Barack Obama when he was president and Antony Blinken, who was back then under Obama, Deputy Secretary of State, where Blinken said, because Obama had cold feet about further inflaming the war he helped start with the coup of 2014, Blinken said that if you're engaging militarily with Russia, you're playing to Russia's strength, because he recognized that Russia, whatever, because it's so big and because it's right there on Ukraine's border, it can always outmatch whatever Ukraine does militarily. And but now, as Secretary of State, Blinken has the opposite policy and everyone's going along with it.
Right. Wow. Well, luckily, we're going to hear from Zelensky himself, who spoke to Kirsten Welker on Meet the Press. Let's take a listen to what he has to say.
You said this week, President Zelensky, that Ukraine would have no chance of winning without more U.S. support. And I guess the question is, can Ukraine now win this war, or is the United States merely giving you enough aid to prolong this war?
Kind of bold question from Welker, and also something that critics of the proxy war have been saying this entire time.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think this support will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine. And we will have a chance for victory if Ukraine really gets the weapons system, which we need so much, which the thousands of soldiers need so much. And this aid should not be just spread in thin layer all over, but it has to end up in tangible weapon systems, some really crucial weapon system which are hard to get, the long range artillery. And I really appreciate that it mentions ATACMS, so long range weapons, and it's important because we need long range weapons to not lose people on the front line, because we have casualties, because we cannot reach that far. Our weapons are not that long range, so we need it, and air defense. This is crucial.
Yeah.
He didn't really answer the question.
No, he didn't at all.
But he really does want ATACMS, these long range missiles, because he wants to hit Crimea, which Russia took in 2014 after the Maidan coup. And that's really what he wants to do with those ATACMS. And maybe, you know, why not fire into Russia? Who knows? Although, you know, Russia considers Crimea to be Russia, but right. Ukraine doesn't. But mainland Russia, he also wants to fire into there maybe. And so, you know, Biden's strategy is why not? Sure. Why
not? I think he kind of answered the question by not answering the question. Because if you think you can win the war, you're probably going to say that.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, we've already tried to give Ukraine a lot of weaponry rather than allow the negotiations that happened immediately after Russia invaded, which were basically blocked by the US and UK, which we've gone over many times. And we've already tried the strategy of, okay, like, let's try just an all out proxy war. And look, there was even some success, you could say, in the fall of 2022, when Ukraine did take back two provinces. And they expelled, you know, tens of thousands of Russian forces. And that's when Mark Milley, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, let's negotiate. Even the top U.S. military officer said, let's negotiate. But he was told to shut up because they wanted to also do this counteroffensive. And look how that went. Like tens of billions of dollars, more money even than is allocated in this current bill, went into the counteroffensive. And Ukraine ended up losing territory. So what makes anyone think now that with, you know, after losing territory and so many people, that Ukraine could possibly do better now with another injection of U.S. money? It just doesn't add up. But yet, that's the consensus.
Yeah. Yeah. The math doesn't work, but the war hunger does.
Okay, well, I think we have one more Zelensky clip. Let's hear from him.
Reports of a lack of morale. Some 650,000 men who are eligible to fight, we are told, have fled Ukraine. You have lowered the draft eligible age, but you...
Say it again?
Was there a glitch for you guys or just for me?
I think it was just for you. I heard her say that 650,000 fighting age Ukrainians have fled the country. It's a lot of people. A lot of people. People have fled Russia too, but I think the number is more in Ukraine. And thousands, for example, just on the Romanian border, thousands of people have swam in very frigid waters over to Romania to avoid fighting. Thousands of people. That's just in one area. So she's saying over 650,000 have fled the country overall. And they're having a hard time drafting people because, first of all, they've already killed off a lot of people. And second of all, there's an issue where you have more, where you have wealthier Ukrainians not wanting to fight. And a lot of the people on the front lines are sort of are lower class. And that also creates resentment and division. And but anyway, Zelensky has an answer for all this.
You've resisted a full call up of all Ukrainian men. What do you say to young men who don't want to fight, who don't want to risk their lives in this war for their country?
This war is the war for the sake of all of us. This is our land. We don't have another place to go. And the citizens of Ukraine understand that. Of course, there are people who don't want, who are not ready, but we do have this mobilization campaign. We do have a draft. We do have a strong army. And we can be frank, in Russia, of course, they have more people, and people are forced there. So, for example, if someone in Russia is deserting the battlefield, they just shoot them on sight. We cannot do that because we have the democratic values. We live in the democratic country. So, to be frank, in Ukraine, you really have a lot of people who are ready to protect the motherland. But of course, the motivation, the morale can go down, especially when they go to the front line and they see that, well, there are no shells, there are no equipment. That's why the aid from the states is so important. And people who were trained, they need to be trained by professional people, and they need to have the equipment to be used so that they have this equipment not only on the training field, but also on the actual battlefield. And then, indeed, they can show the performance on the front line. This is very important.
President Zelensky.
And the morale will still high. And then they will indeed defend the motherland.
So he's saying that, I mean, on the one hand, it's sad because he's saying that. He's saying that it's hard to have high morale when you get to the front lines and you have no weapons to defend yourself, right? But that would also make one, perhaps, as the president, think maybe I shouldn't be sending people there.
Yeah. And, you know, he talks like about how we need U.S. support. And but like, remember, when they did the counteroffensive last summer, remember all those articles that came out in the New York Times and the Washington Post that were like basically the Americans' advisors to Ukraine were complaining that Ukrainians were casualty averse? Remember that?
Right. Yes.
They were frustrated. They were frustrated that Ukrainians didn't want to like sacrifice, like, Ukrainian military leaders didn't want to sacrifice more of their people. And the term was casualty averse. So it's like he talks about how we need U.S. support and we need training and their advice. But then when he gets it, what is their advice? It's go sacrifice yourselves.
Right.
You know, that's their genius strategy. And they when Ukraine lost all this territory, they sort of like U.S. officials blamed Ukraine. Like they were frustrated with Ukraine for not sacrificing more people. So that's basically what the U.S. strategy is, to sacrifice yourselves.
Yeah. Can you please be better cannon fodder?
Yeah.
We've created this meat grinder for you. Now please enter.
And again, listen, you know, we talk on the show a lot about how, you know, one alternative is to try diplomacy. And Russia recently said that we could see the Istanbul agreements that were almost finalized in April 2022 before Boris Johnson came to Kyiv and told Zelensky to keep fighting. The Kremlin said that these Istanbul agreements, they could be the basis of new talks. Now, Russia's terms are going to be harsher than they were before. But the alternative is to keep sacrificing more people for what? Like, for that another counteroffensive, but it's not going to, you know, it's just, but again, he underscored the centrality of the U.S. here, that without the U.S., they can't keep fighting. And that also works for diplomacy. Without the U.S. support, they can't negotiate because they depend so much on the U.S., and the U.S. is such a big influence. So, but there's no force right now in Washington calling for that. So maybe a couple of Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene.
But,
you know, it's not going to be enough to move the needle.
No. It's awful. It's so depressing.
All right. Well, for a counter argument to, you know, our all this talk of us for peace, diplomacy, blah, blah, blah. The real experts are Lindsey Graham and Senator Richard Blumenthal. Lindsey Graham, who famously said that as long as we keep arming Ukraine, they'll fight to the last person. He recently went over to Ukraine and told them to lower the age of conscription so they could send more young Ukrainian men off to die. And they joined Fox News to celebrate their victory because these are two people who've, more than anybody, who want to arm Israel, arm Ukraine.
Joining us now, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and Connecticut Democrat Senator Richard Blumenthal. Thank you all for being here this morning. We know that you have traveled to Ukraine together, so let's talk about what's going on there, because now you have this package coming back to the Senate. Your fellow colleague, Republican J.D. Vance, he's got some questions about this. He says in a piece in the New York Times that the math doesn't add up. He says Ukraine needs more soldiers than it can field, even with draconian conscription policies, and it needs more materiel than the United States can provide. The sooner Americans confront this truth, the sooner we can fix this mess and broker for peace. He says even with us ramping up our industrial production here, we're not getting a fraction of what Ukraine says it needs. So why prolong this?
I think that pessimism underestimates America. You know, we're the strongest, greatest country in the history of the world. We can produce the kind of artillery shells, the long-range artillery, the attackums that are necessary, the air defense, Patriot systems. Iran needs many more of them to protect its cities. And
Freudian slip, hear that? He said Iran needs them to protect its cities.
Yeah. Yep.
Breaking news, Richard Blumenthal wants to arm Iran.
Yeah, wow. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. But aren't you reassured, Katie, by that smooth delivery and winning smile from Richard Blumenthal, who's one of the richest people in the Senate? I think they underestimate America. He's talking about how you know, we can manufacture more shells and attack them. Question, Senator, can you manufacture more Ukrainian bodies? Because there's a huge shortage of people to fire these weapons that you want to send off to there, you know, and all the people coming home in body bags, how are you going to replace them?
Aaron, you know, that question shows to me a real lack of optimism on your part. Nothing but pessimism there. You have to change your mind. You have to reframe this. If we just can reframe this, the power of positive thinking is really wonderful. I think that could change the reality on the ground.
That really is his message. The power of positive thinking, the power of positive proxy war thinking.
Power of positive proxy war thinking. Yeah. PPWT.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
And we also can enforce sanctions and seize and sell Russian assets to provide more resources to Ukraine. So we're building.
They've already imposed so many sanctions. Remember Biden kept bragging about how the ruble has gone to rubble.
Right.
William Burns, the head of the CIA, said that our sanctions are going to harm generations of Russians.
So great.
What's happened so far? Russia's economy is outperforming the rest of Europe's. So, you know, more sanctions. Like, this is like, they can't think of any other term. Sanctions, war. Sanctions, war. That's it.
And positive thinking.
And positive thinking.
And this measure, strongly bipartisan, I think, sends a message to the world. The foreign minister of Lithuania yesterday said, good to have you back, America. I think America is back on offense. And this sign that we can come together in a bipartisan way for our national security.
America,
another confession that we're engaged in a proxy war.
Exactly. We're back on offense by having young Ukrainians sacrifice their lives.
Yeah.
So that's how we do offense, is we sit in Washington, send off a bunch of weapons, sit back and watch Ukrainians sacrifice themselves. And that's us on offense. That's us being back. And same thing with Israel, too. We arm Israel to the teeth, let it slaughter defenseless people in Gaza. We're on offense.
Yep. Yeah. Again, these people don't even hide it, right? It's like Adam Schiff famously saying, we have to fight Russia over there, so we have to fight them over here.
They certainly don't. They certainly don't.
And send a message to Vladimir Putin, to Xi, to the dictators of the world. Too soon to be popping your champagne corks. America is going to defend democracy.
So, Senator Vance, though.
Too soon to be popping your champagne corks. That's the message we're sending. Is there any way you could send a message to these leaders you don't like other than sending tens of thousands of more people off to die on your behalf just for the goal of killing more Russians? I mean, is there another way you could, like write them a really nasty letter?
You know?
I mean, we talked about how he embodies positive thinking, but also there's also such a thing as healthy communication.
True.
And he really doesn't like Xi and Putin, but can he just send him a really nasty letter rather than setting off all
those
weapons and people to die? Yeah. I don't know. It's an expensive message. That's all.
It is an expensive message. Yeah. And it's not really his to send. He's not. It'd be one thing if he was going to sacrifice himself.
Yes. He famously lied about fighting in Vietnam, so I don't think he'd be signing up to go fight in Ukraine.
But they'd probably take
the numbers when it comes.
Yeah, they would take them. They definitely would. I'm sorry to laugh, but they do have a manpower shortage. So, Senator Blumenthal, it's never too late.
Yeah.
So Patriot missiles, 155 millimeter shells. He talks about all these things and says, even if we ramp up to the goals that we have for next year, we're not even going to get to like a third of what Ukraine says they need.
Vance is right.
This morning, you got the Russian foreign ministry saying out there it's going to be a fiasco. It's turning into Vietnam, and that we're funding something that's just going to lead to more lost lives.
Well, if you want American military members to stay out of the fight with Russia, help Ukraine. If they go into a NATO nation, Russia, we're in a fight. So with all due respect to Senator Vance, he's wrong.
But if they go into a NATO, I don't even understand that. Oh, I do understand that. Right. This is based on the idea that Russia is just going through Europe. Right. So we have to stop them in Ukraine before they get to a NATO nation, in which case we'd be forced to defend them. All right. I got it. Right.
The problem with that argument is not based on reality, but sure. Like the problem with the argument is that Russia's goal is to keep Ukraine out of NATO.
Right, exactly.
Because as William Burns, the current director of the CIA, warned back in 2008 when he was the ambassador to Moscow, he said that everyone across the Russian spectrum, whether it's Putin or his opponents, they all say that, you know, NATO for Ukraine is a red line, because if there's a civil war inside Ukraine, that will ethnic Russians in Ukraine, which number in the millions, are under attack. That's going to force Russia to basically come to their defense, and then they have World War III because Ukraine's a NATO nation. So they don't want to keep Ukraine in NATO. So Russia's whole goal is to keep Ukraine out of NATO. And there's been a peace agreement on the table there for years called the Minsk Accords, which Ukraine refused to implement. And Russia decided, when it invaded in February 2022, to try to basically enforce the Minsk Accords at the barrel of a gun. You can't say that about the rest of Europe. Like, Russia doesn't have a similar interest. And other countries don't have the historical significance to Russia that Ukraine has. So this idea that somehow Russia, after getting bogged down in Ukraine, is going to go invade somewhere else is just such a complete joke.
Well, it's based on the Hitlerian comparison, which people love doing.
Yeah.
People love pretending that Putin is as bad as or worse than Hitler, that this is appeasement, Chamberlain, Churchill, all that. Munich. People love those really bad ahistorical comparisons. Because show me where Hitler was like drafting peace agreement plans.
I mean, people would argue that the peace agreement that was reached in Istanbul, or almost reached in Istanbul, the Minsk Accords, that these were equivalent to sort of like a, you know, like a Chamberlain type surrender, right? That's the argument.
Right.
Because they say it would have given Russia control of Ukraine, but it actually, it wouldn't have. The Minsk Accords would have kept all of Ukraine's territory, with the exception of Crimea, which Russia took and is not giving back because it considers Crimea historically to be Russian. It was a part of, it was transferred to to Ukraine in 1954. Most Crimeans, according to polls, according to U.S.-backed polls, want to be a part of Russia. But the rest of Ukraine under the Minsk Accords would have stayed Ukrainian territory. But the problem is Ukrainian ultranationalists didn't want that territory back because it's filled with people who identify with Russia, and they didn't want to let Russia have any influence inside of Ukraine.
Right.
But the problem is they're Ukrainians, and they actually wanted to be inside their own country. They're called separatist people in the East, but they're actually not. And Russia, meanwhile, seeing that the U.S. gained so much influence inside Ukraine after backing a coup in 2014, it was in their interest to support these peace accords, because that would have basically kept their allies in the eastern part of Ukraine under Ukrainian territory, and the country would have stayed neutral and therefore avoided war for everybody. But for hawks in Washington and ultranationalists in Ukraine, that wasn't enough. And so here we are today. That's that argument.
We were told within 4 days, Kyiv would fall.
But is he wrong about the math?
Yeah,
is he wrong about the...
By the way, yes, we were told in 4 days Kyiv would fall. But the problem is Russia didn't send in enough forces to take Kyiv. They sent in about 170,000 forces. It's not enough to take over the capital of a major country. The whole point of Russia's invasion was to compel the negotiations that Ukraine had been avoiding and refusing to do. Because right before Russia invaded, Ukraine said they would not talk to the leaders of the rebellion in the East, the Russian-backed rebellion in the East, and they wouldn't respect the Minsk Accords. So Russia basically tried to force the Minsk Accords at the barrel of a gun. And it almost worked until Boris Johnson came over and told Ukraine to keep fighting. So this idea that they wanted to take over the country and, you know, restore the Soviet Union, it's not borne out by the facts.
Reduction.
Yeah, he's wrong about the whole concept that we can't deal with multiple problems. In World War II, we fought the Germans and the Japanese. We have an industrial base that needs to be retooled. But the Ukrainian military, with our help, has killed about 50% of the combat power of the Russians. This is the year of more. They're going to have more weapons, but we also want them to have new weapons, ATACMs, to knock the bridge down between Crimea and Russia. They're going to have F-16s. So this idea, give up on Ukraine, makes the world safer. If you pull the plug on Ukraine because you don't have enough capability, there goes Taiwan. The Ukrainians are fighting like tigers. This aid package has a loan component to it. This would not have passed without Donald Trump. I want to thank the House Speaker and Hakeem Jeffries working together in a bipartisan fashion to give weapons to Ukraine to fight a fight that matters to us. And President Trump has created a loan component to this package that gives us leverage down the road. So this idea that we can't help Ukraine, Israel, and...
There we go. This is so bipartisan. And he's right. Listen, Trump did play a role here. The corporate media wanted to pretend as if Trump was the one blocking this Ukraine measure, when really he kind of just... He played coy. He never said he was outright against it. He always does that. Basically, Trump's base has an anti-war component to it. That's a big reason why he won in 2016, is because he pretended to be anti-intervention. So Trump has kind of kept that up, and like he's fed into this media narrative that he's like against Ukraine aid. But really, he's actually not. And he's the one who said we should just give the money in the form of a loan rather than a direct grant. That was Trump's dissent. Is let's send the money, but let's make sure that Ukraine pays us back, which of course they won't. But, so Graham is properly thanking Trump because he did play a role here.
But I thought Trump was in Putin's pocket.
Well, it's more from the Russian, the classic Russian playbook, RPB, the RPB. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, but it's funny how neither Graham nor Blumenthal really engage in the math question. It's just about attitude.
Yeah.
Grit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like J.D. Vance is saying, we don't have the capacity to produce these shells. And their answer is, well, Graham's answer is, well, we fought Russia, like we fought Germany and Japan right. in World War II. Yeah. So case closed.
Yeah, case closed. Exactly.
Okay.
And Blumenthal's response is pessimism. That's just pessimism talking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not manifest. The problem is people like J.D. Vance and all critics of this proxy war, they're not manifesting a victory.
Taiwan at the same time, I reject that. I reject it totally.
Okay,
and,
well, let me...
And he's wrong on the numbers also because the Defense Production Act, which we used in the Korean War, can convert civilian production capacity to produce the artillery, the vehicles, all of the stuff that the industrial base can and will produce if it's given the right demand signal. And we know on the Armed Services Committee, where I serve, that a consistent demand signal is necessary to produce the kind of investments that is necessary for those numbers to change.
Okay. Well, we're not there. The tooling up has not happened.
Thank God that our parents and grandparents didn't have that attitude in World War II.
See,
hey, we can only fight one thing at a time.
He's not
Nobody's
saying that.
Dying
what he's
Ukraine.
Saying is that that Ukraine doesn't have the manpower it needs, and that our
go. I just got back. I was there 2 weeks ago. They changed our conscription laws. They've got all the manpower they need. They need weapons. Is what they don't have is weapons. They've just added 200,000 people to the army by changing their conscription laws. It's one thing to talk about Ukraine over here. It's another thing to go. I challenged J.D. Vance to go to Ukraine and get a briefing from the Ukrainian military and talk to the Ukrainian people. Then tell me what you think.
All right. Well, maybe you all can go to.
Maybe Lindsey Graham could talk to the people fleeing Ukraine.
I mean, Lindsey Graham is the guy who went over with John McCain and said that 2017 will be the year of offense. Right. This has been going on for so long. So in late 2016, Lindsey Graham was going over the front lines, meeting with soldiers, saying 2017 will be the year of offense. So he's been encouraging this war for years. And how's it going for Ukraine? They've lost 20% of their country. They've lost hundreds of thousands of people. Their long-term future is in serious jeopardy. And he wants to just double down on it and continue. And he thinks that everything is going well. It's just he also said, he wants Ukraine to basically run out of people. He said that as long as we could keep arming them, they'll fight to the last person. That's his strategy, basically, is to keep using them as cannon fodder. He hasn't hit that. It's just, it's really.
I think Blumenthal should both volunteer, honestly, because they probably fit the new conscription bracket anyway.
They might.
And even if they don't, again, I'm sure they take them. All right. Should we more from them or do we want to move to the
next one?
Yeah, he could go on your next trip.
Yeah, we're going back. You're welcome to come. Quit talking about things you don't know anything about until you go.
Okay.
Yeah, Aaron, I don't think you and I should ever comment on this again until we've been to Ukraine.
Fair enough. I mean, I've never been to Russia either. But what I do know is that Russia is a lot bigger than Ukraine and has taken 20%.
From here, it looks that way, Aaron.
Yeah.
When you're there, it's very different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my other problem with going to Ukraine is they put me on a list of people they want censored from the internet. And I'm also on one of those hit lists.
Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know if I'll be going. And, you know, but regardless, it's just I don't think you need to go to either country, Russia or Ukraine, to recognize that the proxy war is not going well for Ukraine and that there have been reasonable chances at diplomacy that have been blocked. And I just, you know, rather than encouraging more people to die, we could encourage people to talk.
Right.
But anyway, I'm not a senator and I don't go to these classified briefings. So.
Right. You don't know what they know.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Mark Warner, another major war hawk. He is very happy about the so-called foreign aid bill. And he talked about it to Face the Nation.
President Zelensky said this morning on another network, it's important that they get crucial long-range artillery like ATACMS. Is that what this money will pay for? And if so, when will they actually get them?
Well, the great news is this is finally happening. It should have happened 6 months ago. The next best time is right now, this week. We've seen the Ukrainians overperform. If you step back for a moment and think about the fact that for most of my life, most of America's defense forces were focused on Russia. Getting this additional equipment as quickly as possible. I hope once this gets to the president by Tuesday or Wednesday, that these shipments will be literally launched with that longer range attack.
By next week.
I hope once the president signs, we've been told that it is the president's signature, making sure Congress does its job, that these materials will be in transit by the end of the week. And on that schedule, what it will do is, it's clearly been the case that the Ukrainians' morale has been great, but it's been undermined over the last couple of months when they have been literally given out rationed bullets, 8 to 10 bullets a day, and on artillery shells, Russians 10 to 1. You can't underestimate the Ukrainians' grit, determination, but if they don't have the materials, they can't carry this fight to the
Russians. Will they get those long-range artillery?
Yes.
Not just ammunition?
The ATACMS, I believe the administration was prepared over the last couple of months to prepare or to provide ATACMS. It is written into this legislation.
You know, over a year ago, the Biden administration was saying that the ATACMS, sorry, we can't provide these long-range ATACMS because it's just too dangerous. We don't want them being fired into Russia. It could trigger, a massive escalation. They've forgotten that. You know, they've just completely abandoned that because things have gone so horribly that they're getting desperate. So this is a recipe for a huge escalation. These ATACMS, they will be used to hit Crimea, the Crimean Bridge, and that's a big deal for Russia. And every time we've seen Ukraine being able to, you know, penetrate deep into Russia, Russia's responded by hitting Ukraine back a lot harder. Like, Ukraine's recently been attacking, gas stations and power facilities in Russia. So Russia's responded by massively escalating its attacks on Ukraine's power grid. So it's as giddy as these people are, it really overlooks just that we're going to see, unless this is stopped, a massive escalation. It's getting, it's hard to contemplate, but it's getting even more dangerous.
You know how there's that expression about having beer goggles when you're drunk? And you know, they have war goggles.
They certainly do. They certainly do. Okay. More from Senator Mark Warner.
According to the State Department, China has helped Russia rebuild its defense industrial base, which has an impact on the battlefield as well here. How have they been able to just blow through U.S. sanctions or defy them to help the Russians who are fighting Ukraine?
Well, if we look back again, I think we would all acknowledge that the sanctions regime has not been as tight as we'd like to see in it. China being the worst defender with direct military support. India, a country I'm very supportive of, but India in terms of purchasing Russian oil, that given that hard currency to Russia for them to go out into the marketplace and acquire arms.
Katie, you're muted.
Sorry. It's interesting that this person, that Warner just expressed his great support for India. I don't think Modi is the most democratic leader. And these people claim that they're all about democracy. But interesting political philosophy there.
It's one of the reasons why I think this package, which the House just passed, we will take up this week, that says we have to be ready to be prepared for our national security interests, not only in Ukraine and Russia, also in terms of military assistance to Israel, but with additional humanitarian aid for the Palestinians who are in such great challenges. And there's about $8 or $9 billion for the Indo-Pacific region because of the concern that we have about China's aggressiveness towards Taiwan. Clearly, the Chinese linkage to Russia, combined with the fact that the Iranians are providing drones, for example, for Russia and the outlier nation, North Korea. I know the terminology used to be axis of evil. This may be the 2024 axis of evil combination of nations.
Okay. So we have another iteration of axis of evil. Things go great when we accuse people of being part of an axis of evil.
Yeah. Historically, that's true.
Yeah. Fantastic legacy there, the whole axis of evil.
I'm glad he's acknowledging he's the same thing as George W. Bush.
Really? Like,
I mean, they're just,
It's, they're just continuing that playbook. Let's just declare an axis of evil and send people off to die. Why not?
Yeah, worked well last time. We're so much safer after Iraq. Also, it's interesting he says that he wants, I appreciate that he talks about aid to Palestinians because of the challenges that they're facing. What are the challenges? Are there mass floods?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the line. It's like, yes, we can supply Israel with all the weaponry to slaughter Palestinians. But for those who manage to survive, we're going to drop some aid in there, a little trickle.
Which may actually kill them, but hopefully won't. Yeah.
Well, yes, it's true. Some airdrops have killed people inside Gaza. It's, it's so sick. Okay. Let's keep it going. Ro Khanna, he's one of those Democrats who signed a letter in October 2022 asking Biden to negotiate with Russia to end the war in Ukraine. And after a neocon meltdown within 24 hours, Ro Khanna and his colleagues withdrew the letter. Although Ro Khanna discredited actually stood by it. But
yeah,
anyway,
he was the only one,
Yeah, he was the only one willing to defend signing a letter calling for diplomacy. Imagine that. But anyway, all that's been forgotten.
It's like he voted the right way on Israel this time.
He did, sure. But when it comes to Ukraine, he voted to funnel another $60 billion into this proxy war. And here he is defending Speaker Mike Johnson for letting that vote happen.
Khanna, does Speaker Johnson deserve credit for how this played out?
He does. Look, we came into Congress together, and he always cared about civility. He actually led the civility pledge.
That's right. Yeah.
And we had one issue, which was give individual votes. Don't lump things together. And I give him credit for doing this. I would actually vote to table any motion to vacate him. You know, Chairman McCaul quoted Churchill. One of the things Churchill said is that America always exhausted every wrong option until doing the right thing. Yeah. And this shows that American democracy still is very strong.
Okay, you just said something.
Hey, Ro, what happened to you calling for diplomacy with Russia to end the Ukraine proxy war? Like, he did sign that letter. He did defend it. It's like, it's just completely been forgotten. And now Mike Johnson, who finally let a vote happen to fuel the proxy war, $60 billion, according to Ro Khanna, did the right thing.
Right. I don't even, it's not that it's been forgotten. It's that people learned their lesson.
Yeah, I just mean forgotten.
Costly.
Like, I mean forgotten, and that it just never gets discussed anymore. No one even brings it up. No, no one bothers to like even acknowledge the possibility that we could negotiate. It's just not even. It doesn't enter anyone's brain.
Yeah. And Roe knows better because he actually stood by the letter. Hey, that rhymes.
And that rhymes. And that rhymes. Yeah. We love a good rhyme on Useful Idiots.
We love a good rhyme. Yeah.
Significant. You said you would.
No, it's a sign that it's true. The truth rhymes,
Just like if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, we didn't do an R.E.P. R.I.P.
It rhymed. It rhymed. They had to acquit. The glove didn't fit. They had to acquit. It rhymed.
Yeah, it rhymed.
You can't argue with a rhyme. You just can't.
Oppose the motion to vacate. In other words, you will protect Speaker Johnson's job if Marjorie Taylor Greene and the others go through with their threat to try to remove him.
I would through the end of the term. I expect Speaker Pelosi, Speaker Jeffries will be there.
So touching. So touching. We're going to come together to protect each other for the sake of a proxy war.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That's bipartisanship right there.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Another very happy man is Michael McCaul. He's the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He's a Republican. He was very upset with his Republican colleagues for calling that military support for Ukraine. And so this is a happy day for him.
The chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Michael McCaul. So let me ask you, Congressman, at the end, the vote was overwhelming, particularly on Ukraine,
right?
On all of these bills. Why did it have to be so difficult? Why did it take months to happen?
Well, I think, you know, the motion to vacate.
Classic corporate TV question. Why? Why did it take so long to spend more money on a proxy war? Why? Enlighten me. Like, what's going on here?
What went wrong?
Yeah, what went wrong? What's the problem? Look at those little flags. He's got a Michael McCaul has a Israel flag and a Ukraine flag.
Beautiful.
By the way, I mean, for progressives like in the House who are like, you know, really strong on Israel, they've been voting against all these bills. Does it not occur to them like maybe they're on the wrong side if also people like Michael McCaul are openly saying that Ukraine and Israel, that it's like
are
part of the same fight?
Right.
You know, if Michael McCaul and Mitch McConnell and all these people who they're against and all these other issues are like so gung-ho about also arming Ukraine, could that maybe make them reconsider? Signed. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a strange dissonance here, but okay.
It really is, yeah. It's interesting he doesn't have an American flag on.
Yeah, no. No time
for
that.
What a metaphor. He can't fit that on there, yeah, on the lapel.
No time for that. No. Yeah. No.
Kate McCarthy, which is a rarely used tool, only twice in the history of Congress, right? And the threat of the motion to vacate kept this from coming to the floor in a timely basis. I have to say, watching your piece, I am so proud of the Speaker, Mike Johnson. He went through a transformation. At the end of the day, profile and courage is putting the nation above yourself. And that's what he did. He said at the end of the day, I'm going to be on the right side of history, irrespective of my job. And I think that was what I admired so much.
It was a transformation. I mean, he had initially said no Ukraine funding until we take care of the border. He was with a lot, you know, basically what the radicals are saying. How do you explain that transformation? What made Johnson become the steadfast guy on this? As you said,
I'm going to guess bullying and bribe, maybe even bribery.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's my guess.
maybe Jesus.
Yeah. Well, listen, like, would Jesus have supported?
Not my Jesus, not your Jesus, but I think Mike Johnson's maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The profile and courage.
I think he tried to do what.
It's a profile and courage to cave on your own previous position to the warmongers in Washington and send tens of thousands of more Ukrainians off to die. And risk a massive a further escalation with Russia. That's a profile in courage, according to Jonathan Carl of ABC News.
And Mike McCaul.
The Freedom Caucus wanted him to do. It wasn't going to work in the Senate or the White House. At the end of the day, we were running out of time. Ukraine's getting ready to fall. And I think the briefings that he got in the classified space, the advice he got from people like me and Mike Turner, House Intelligence, Armed Services, I think talking to world leaders, he became the man that went from a district in Louisiana to the Speaker of the United States to also someone who had to look at the entire world and had to carry the burden of that and make the right decision. And his son's going to Annapolis. He is smart. He knows what's at stake here. If we surrender in Ukraine like we did in Afghanistan, America will be weaker, not stronger.
If we surrender in Ukraine, we're not the ones fighting.
No, it's Ukrainian. We are. Right. It's our proxy war, but not our bodies.
Yeah.
Which is how a proxy war works. Yeah.
Okay. For time's sake, let's skip the next McCaul clip and go to Congressmember Jared
Moskowitz. Love him.
You're a big fan of his, right, Katie?
Big fan. Yeah. Talk about profile and courage. This guy deserves that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he a Democrat or a Republican?
No, he's a Republican.
He's a Republican.
I think, actually, I don't know. Wait, which one is he?
I mean, they're pretty. Oh, no, he's a Democrat. He's a Democrat.
He is a Democrat. Wow, yeah.
He's a Democrat, yeah. I mean,
they're interchangeable in this.
Exactly.
Issue,
like, they're hard to understand. As we're seeing today, I mean, they're really like, what's the difference?
Right.
It recalls that ad. Remember that ad? Like, what's the diff? I don't remember what they were selling, but what's the diff? Democrats, Republicans, when it comes to war, what's the diff?
Don't know that. Was that a Canadian ad or just something here that I missed?
Maybe that was a Canadian ad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, Jared Moskowitz. What's the diff? We haven't talked about this. Yes. He's going to talk about the other vote, which is because they weren't just voting to prolong Ukraine proxy war. They also were voting to give Israel more weapons to slaughter Palestinians with. So here he is reacting to that.
It's good to have you with us. Let's start with Israel, because that was a big part of the aid package that was passed yesterday as well. A number of your fellow Democrats voted against it. A joint statement saying this: Benjamin Netanyahu appears willing to sacrifice the hostages while inflicting extraordinary suffering on the people of Gaza. He is willing to expand this conflict to preserve his power. Most Americans do not want our government to write a blank check to further Prime Minister Netanyahu's war in Gaza. How do you answer those concerns?
Well, listen, this war that's going on right now in Gaza is not about one man. It's about the survival of the state of Israel, right? When you have Iran launching ballistic missiles, 130 of them, towards the state of Israel. Remember, ballistic missiles could carry a nuclear payload if Iran ever got nuclear weapons. People think that this is the first time Israel and Iran are at war, and those were the first attacks directly. But Iran's got proxies all over surrounding Israel, between the Houthis in Yemen, you had Hamas in Gaza, you have Hezbollah in Lebanon. And so this is really about Israel's survival. And as far as my colleagues on the left that voted against it, I would say the same thing to the 20 Republicans that voted against aid to Israel. Now is not the time to abandon our allies. Everyone is watching. Russia is watching. China is watching. Iran is watching. And in fact, the Russian foreign minister's statement when we passed this aid package wasn't just about Ukraine. The spokeswoman for the Russian foreign minister said, you know, the United States standing by its allies, Taiwan, Israel, and Ukraine. They put it together. And that's what we've known all the time. We've known these things are connected. We know Russia and China are trying to destabilize the country, trying to destabilize the world. And we have to make sure the United States stands for Western democracy. And so, look, it's no surprise to me that the left and the right found themselves. Usually when that happens, that means that the rest of Congress passed a pretty good bill.
Well, one of the...
You know, I've been to a lot of bar mitzvahs in my lifetime. And I love it when a lawmaker sounds like they're basically giving a bar mitzvah speech.
You know?
Like, I feel like in some synagogue out there, some pro-war synagogue, you have similar speeches. Like,
right.
We have to stand by our allies. Iran, you know what I mean?
Right.
And he has the sound of like a young adolescent boy giving a bar mitzvah speech. So
which
I don't know.
With his nuanced view of world of politics.
Exactly.
As a young adolescent boy. Yeah.
Yeah. And his parents are
proud of him. And like a bar mitzvah, he'll get a lot of... rewards for it.
He will certainly get a lot of guilt for
to assuage his guilt.
Exactly. Yes.
Concerns some conservatives have is the $9 billion for aid that will flow into Gaza. The speaker says there are guardrails on it. He's confident that it's going to get to the right place. But the Defense for Democracies actually has some reporting on this, and they look into it and said, you know, there's video of the IDF has taken of Hamas taking these aid trucks as they come over. They say that Hamas is threatening people.
I love this. This is the conservative one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the funding of Israel. It may be give too much aid.
Yeah, we're thrilled with the weaponry, but what about the food packages, the powdered milk, the blankets that are going to go to some people inside Gaza?
Right.
Don't you regret voting for that?
Right.
Is there any way we can maybe,
It reminds me of that Republican who was upset about the humanitarian aid, remember? And he was like, no, we need to finish them like Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
There we go. Yes.
With death if they help Israel distribute this aid. Are you confident that you can tell the American taxpayer that what we're spending and sending over there is not going to end up in the hands of terrorists?
Well, look, that's why from the very beginning I favored defunding UNRWA and making sure that we could put steps in place to get the humanitarian aid in without it winding up in the hands of Hamas. So, look, I think the United States and Israel are going to do the best they can.
It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing that he can say that without being challenged. Like, actually, the UNRWA allegations were unfounded, which is why some of the governments which unfunded defunded UNRWA have reversed that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what a remotely responsible journalist would say.
Yeah.
But no, he's going to pretend that UNRWA is terrorist, even though the evidence shows that they were actually tortured into confessing things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
Region, Egypt and Jordan, to make sure that humanitarian aid gets to the innocent Palestinians in the region. But look again, right? This is about Hamas wanting to hurt innocent Palestinians. Hamas taking aid away from the innocent Palestinians, just like they put weapons in hospitals and in schools, just like they tell innocent Palestinians not to leave.
Actually, Israel was caught putting weapons in hospitals after they raided Al-Shifa. It's so obvious what they did. They started stashing like rifles inside incubators to make it look as if Hamas was just keeping weapons stored in medical equipment, and they were caught staging stuff. So on top of, you know, staging weaponry being stored in hospitals, then Israel also destroyed hospitals, which, by the way, again, it's just, there's so many atrocities committed by Israel. Some just get forgotten. So for example, Israel destroying Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital, killing, I don't know how many people there, a lot of people, there's mass graves. It's just, in any, if Russia did this, this would be covered every single day.
Yeah.
Like when Russia was accused of committing atrocities in Bucha early on in the invasion, right, as the negotiations were happening in Istanbul, that was a massive story. And it's still discussed. Israel doing something like this in Al-Shifa, it's just completely off the radar.
And it's also hard to keep up because they've attacked so many hospitals.
It's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible. Okay, that's enough of Bar Mitzvah Jared. But let's go to, you know, there's been a huge thing going on at Columbia University in Manhattan, a massive encampment of students protesting the genocide in Gaza. The administration got people arrested.
Yeah.
It kicked people out of their student housing. But the protesters
evicted people.
Yeah.
Also, important part of the context is that not only did Columbia shut down before this, not only did they shut down Students for Justice in Palestine, but in their crackdown on anti-Semitism, they shut down Jewish Voice for Peace.
There we go.
That organization. Yeah.
And Katie, you visited the protest, right?
Yeah, I did. I mostly actually just went to a press conference. I was outside Columbia. I went to a, I didn't sneak in or get in, but I went to the protest. And I then went to a press conference that was held in front of the president's home.
Okay. Well, of course, our media is covering this with its noted accuracy and fairness by basically dismissing everyone protesting against the genocide as being an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And so CNN covered Columbia a little bit, and this is what they said.
And this is
there
not a morning show.
There has been this flashpoint in the past few days at Columbia University in New York.
Yeah.
An Orthodox rabbi who is associated with the university, he sent a message to Jewish students, Orthodox Jewish students, telling them that the campus is not safe and that they should go home immediately until it is. But then we heard from the Hillel Center of Barnard and Columbia University saying that students should stay. What's your take?
Of course. Of course. I mean, I have strong feelings about this. I think that the conservative Orthodox rabbi got ahead of the intelligence, got ahead of what the university is clearly trying.
The intelligence? Like what is Columbia like a war zone?
Yeah.
Like, is
got
the CIA
ahead. Also, it makes it seem like there's intelligence out there that he got ahead of instead of just making something up.
Yeah, but it's like, is Columbia now like a war zone? Like, do we, you know, like, what is she getting briefings?
Yeah.
From the CIA on what's happening at Columbia?
Right. Like, if she is getting briefings, what's interesting is that the NYPD, you know, the irony is that the NYPD said they didn't see a clear and present danger and that the kids they arrested were very cooperative.
Yeah.
Like, when you are less gung-ho about arrests than the president of a university, maybe that president of the university is doing something wrong.
But it's like, we're talking about a student protest, okay? A bunch of young people who are upset about a genocide. And she's making it sound as if this is like some like conflict zone.
Yeah.
When really we're talking about like a prestigious university in Manhattan, you know, the intelligence. Okay. Let's hear more intelligence.
To do, there's no one's they're basically trying to stop all of these, so we have to have productive safety and security measures that don't go terrifying everyone. It was, I'm going to be honest with you, it was outrageous. I was thrilled that Hillel, the largest Jewish organization for Columbia and Barnard, came out and said, no, I mean, that this is, you have a group of students and within that group, a percentage is discussing, is hostile, has hatred. No one's defending that. The university needs all you. I want to take a step back here because we're entering.
Okay, so now, so the kids who oppose genocide are hostile, have hatred.
Yeah.
No, they actually love humanity, unlike people on CNN and the heads of Columbia, who are all complicit in this genocide. And this attempt to smear people just because they want to stop mass murder, right. It's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, they're anti-Semites for that.
All right, well... Is that enough of this one?
Yeah, but we need to show an important tweet from Jake Tapper because, you know, that rabbi may have gotten ahead of the intelligence, but that didn't stop Jake Tapper from tweeting out the WhatsApp message from the rabbi. So Jacob Tapper yesterday tweeted out, in response to quote unquote horrific scenes of anti-Semitic harassment at and around campus, the Orthodox rabbi at Columbia Barnard sent a WhatsApp message to more than 290 Jewish students this morning, recommending that they go home until it's safe again for them on campus.
Oh, God.
So he tweets that out.
So Jake Tapper, who spread Israeli lies about Al Shifa Hospital hosting a command center for Hamas, is now resorting to trying to snitch on college campus students protesting a genocide by accusing them all of being anti-Semites. He's a CNN anchor.
You know what reminds me of? It reminds me of how all these CNN anchors and all these media people were so up in arms about the violence against Palestinians, not just there in Palestine, but the young boy who was stabbed to death, the college students. Oh, no, they weren't, actually. They haven't actually talked about safety.
No, of course not.
Muslims.
No.
Unbelievable.
But they will manufacture anti-Semitism cases to undermine people who are just trying to oppose a genocide, which they're all supporting. Jake Tapper and company.
It's interesting. Jake Tapper didn't update his Twitter thread with an announcement from Hillel saying, no, don't go anywhere. We're staying open.
Yeah. And meanwhile, of course, you know, for all this alleged anti-Semitism going around, there was a Shabbat service held at the protest by Jewish Voice for Peace on Friday, which somehow didn't make it into Jake Tapper's roundup of horrific.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the people who've been arrested have been Jewish also.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting? I got to show one more tweet. I can do a screen share of it. But do you know Campbell Brown? She's a Meta person and she used to be a journalist. And she's married to someone who was a PR shill for the Iraq War. And, you know, she's not a journalist now, but she used to be. And I think it's important. She used to be a co-anchor at NBC and did Weekend Today from 2003 to 2007. Then she hosted a primetime news program called Campbell Brown on CNN from 2008 to 2010. And her husband is Then she went to Meta. And her husband is Daniel Samuel Senior, former chief spokesperson for the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. Okay.
I remember that name. I knew that was familiar. Yeah.
He was a big embarrassment. But even Republicans were like, oh, God, this isn't good. He's terrible at his job. So I want to take a look at this tweet that she tweeted out. And again, she's not a journalist now, but she was a journalist. And I think it's kind of a telling tweet from someone who used to be a journalist. So she writes, I'm on my way to Israel where my two sons will be safer and feel more welcome than they would be today on the Upper West Side. Is Yisrael Chai. And I tweeted, actually, I said, it's true. Hamas put tunnels under Zabar's. But she's obviously referring to Columbia University here. And just be consistent. either Israel is under an existential threat and has to defend itself, in which case it's not safe there, or that's a lie and they're just genociding Palestinians. You know what I mean? Like, pick a narrative.
Somebody think of the embattled Jewish people of the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
I was thinking maybe they can find refuge in the Zabar. Zabars can, like, open up its doors to them.
Yes. Yes.
Be
yes.
Create a safe space. Yeah.
Okay. One more thing before we go. Thanks to the magic of the internet, I have found evidence that I was not misremembering. There was an ad.
Oh, good.
About what's the diff? It was a Pepsi ad.
Huh.
And let's watch it. Because maybe we can learn something about our political parties today when it comes to funding foreign wars. I think it can tell us something.
Let's check the map. Pizzas are getting cold.
Hold on. It's over there.
No, it's not in my face. No. Check on the map.
Cancel that order, guys.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's see. You want a Coke?
No, I'm making a Pepsi.
Well, what's the diff?
So he says, you know, you want a Coke, you want a Pepsi? What's the diff? And right. Look what happens. Look what happens. There is a dip.
The difference is one tastes better.
This one.
You chose Pepsi.
The majority of soft drink users tested prefer the taste of Pepsi over Coke Classic.
So, you want sausage or pepperoni?
What's the diff?
Whoa.
Great ad.
I never saw that ad.
Great ad. Isn't that a great ad? Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we're not endorsing one soft drink over the other. I think the useful lady's consensus is that they're all evil. But unlike Pepsi and Coke, when it comes to war, funding war in Congress, there is no diff right now between Democrats and Republicans, except some Democrats, a few more Democrats oppose funding mass murder in Israel, and a few more Republicans oppose funding the proxy war in Ukraine.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. By the way, just quick announcement. Wanted to let people know tomorrow's Katie Halper show is going to be very exciting. It's going to be different. I don't want to give away more, but it's going to be different from usual.
Wow.
Yeah.
Another cliffhanger.
And that's 7 p.m. No, it's actually starting earlier. It's starting 5 or 5:30. I can't remember, but I'll have a link up soon. But it's at youtube.com/The Katie Halper Show. It's going to be an exciting night.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this was an exciting Monday morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. Support the show at usefulidiotspodcast.com. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.